this week on Dan Really Likes Wine, we take the sartorial stakes to new highs. Never have we had such a well-dressed guest on Dan Really Likes Wine. Apologies, Anthony Hamilton Russell, but not only is he one of those stylish people in the world of wine, he is also an expert in a part of the world that has great interest for South Africans because he is the defining figure in the French wine industry, initially post-student years as an importer, and now as somebody who's educated millions of people in China about the world of wine. Those numbers have a little asterisk to them, but he has changed many, many lives. He's a master of wine. Julien Boulard, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. What an introduction. I'm impressed.
I'm impressed not only that you look fantastic, but that you've come in on this wave of enthusiasm and excitement. We're about an hour and a half late in recording because we've been having so much fun talking about your trip to South Africa and a country, a wine, a people that on your third visit, you've been reminded of very vividly just how much you've fallen in love with.
Yeah, definitely. I think South Africa for me is one of my favorite wine countries in the world. And when I go to a restaurant, when I look at the wine list, I often first have a look at what are the choices for African wines. And yeah, I think the people here are amazing. The wines are just incredible. The landscape is just mind-blowing. I think it's such a great country.
Oh, I love hearing that. And I'm very interested to hear how this wine of ours is translating into China. But I'd also love to know how Julien became a master of wine, how you fell in love with wine. You've been in China for, 22 years now, studying Mandarin. Was wine always the plan? As an eight-year-old, was Julien wandering around the French chateau saying, one day I shall teach the people of China about wine? Or was it a more gradual process?
That's a great, actually, that's a cool story because I didn't drink wine at all when I was in France. I started drinking wine when I moved to China.
No, that's because the French wine's rubbish. You need to drink
some. Yeah, sure. Don't start with that.
No wine at all. Nothing.
But not at all. I was still a student when I moved to China. I was learning Mandarin at university, and when I finished my studies, I said, "Okay, maybe I need to find a job now." And being a white face in France, in China is kind of an advantage. And I wanted to do something to take advantage of my physiognomy and do something in regards with French culture. And I bumped into a training report online about a guy who made an internship in Shanghai, I think, working at a wine importer. I said, wine, it could be a good thing. It sounds fancy to me. So, okay, let's have a look at that. And I started to speak about this project with friends, and one of my friends told me that he knew people who were just starting a wine importing company where I live in a small city in the far south of the country called Nanning. And I met the guys. They wanted like a white face for their own face, if you can put it this way. And I started this way in 2007. So I knew nothing about wine, really nothing. I was a pure novice.
This is giving a lot of hope to many people.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, you don't need to know a lot to start, right? So my rule at the beginning was to kind of smooth out the relationship between them and their suppliers, especially in France. And after a year or so, I really got the bug. At the beginning, it was just like a job, like any other job. And I met this guy, a colleague, who knew a little bit about wine. He started to ask me questions, like challenging me. He was asking me, what is the main grape variety in Argentina? What are the grape varieties of Champagne? And I knew nothing. And I found it very funny, actually. I laughed at myself. And so I started to find ways to learn about wine. And one of our suppliers was working for the Bordeaux Wine Council. And he told me that they were just setting up a school in Bordeaux. And if I wanted to, I could go through the back door and attend one of their courses. And so I went to Bordeaux, only a week, like boot camp. And I found it fascinating, everything you can learn. So when I went back to China, I tried to find ways to learn more. And I went online and I found this course, WSET, what the hell is that? A course designed by English people. That can't be good, right? I'm French, come on. And so I registered to WPT level 3, and I just, oh, it was amazing the way everything was structured. It made me really open my mind and my eyes on the world of fine wine. And so I said, okay, let's go further. And I applied for the WPT diploma, so the level 4. It took me 2 years to achieve. And after the level 4, the Master of Wine, that sounds cool. So, okay, let's try that.
You didn't realize quite what you were getting yourself in for, did you?
Well, no, I kind of knew because after when you are learning about wine, when you've done like a WPT level 2 or level 3, you think you know everything. You think, oh my God, I knew everything about wine. Then you do the WPT diploma and you realize that, oh gosh, I don't know that much. And then you know that when you're going to start the Master of Wine program, you will realize that you know nothing about wine. So the more you learn and the more you realize that the wine world is such a vast world, and I find the title Master of Wine a bit pedantic. I never say that I am a master of wine. I said I've passed the Master of Wine exam.
Although for those people who are just listening, you do have a T-shirt saying "Je suis un MW."
Well, I think you're never really a master of wine because it's impossible to master the topic.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
You've found your way into this space, and it could have led you into many different parts of the wine industry, but you found your real calling in education, which I love. Tell me about this wine school, about this platform you have in China.
So when I started the Master of Wine program, I was working for the Wines of Bordeaux. Actually, I helped them for a year or so, on a very short time, but it was very interesting because I was in charge of the activities of the Bordeaux Wine School in China. And helping them with the fight against counterfeiting. So that was a very interesting time. And when I started the Master of Wine, I'm not a good student. I don't have a good memory. And I realized that the best way to remember facts and knowledge was to actually speak it out, to teach it. That's the best way to remember. So I say, okay, how can I remember? How can I teach more? And say, okay, let's set up a wine school. Let's start teaching WSET and masterclass classes about South African wines and about Chilean wines, the wines of Australia, etc. And so I really set up this company and this wine school with the goal to study for the Master of Wine. So that's very strange because my goal was
a very elaborate study project.
Yeah. But because my goal was very clear, I wanted to pass the Master of Wine. So I really put all my resources together toward this goal. And when I passed it, I realized, I don't know if I really want to teach anymore, really. It made me remember why I, in the first place, I set up this wine school. So I'm still teaching, and I love teaching. I love sharing wine knowledge. However, now I'm moving towards more of a social media content creation. So I do a lot of videos, a lot of vlogging in Chinese for the Chinese market. And not only sharing about wine knowledge, but also sharing about, everything. Because I had a feeling that, teaching about wine has this default, which is you don't have an ending to it, and you don't have a final product, and you don't really have this creation space you would have in a more creative, like you do a job. So I started to make videos like very, very regularly, and I really enjoy the fact that you can start something and have a finished product and then move to another episode, another video. So now I'm doing both wine education and content creation.
And both really forms of education, though, because while one might be a little formal and involve a course or a classroom or an online lesson, you are still through that content. And I've watched a fair bit of it. My Mandarin needs a bit of work, but you can see the passionate energy behind it. And you're allowing somebody just sitting on the train on the way home to connect with wine in a way that previously not only would they not have been able to, but they would never have thought of doing.
Yeah, exactly. And when you teach to a masterclass to an audience of 100 people, the masterclass lasts maybe 2 hours. And after these 2 hours, it's finished. It's done. Well, a video, it has its own life, like your podcast as well. I mean, you're posting it tonight. People are going to listen to it tomorrow, but maybe a year or 50 years after that.
In 300 years, people are going to be listening to this.
Of course, we will.
Seminal moments in wine conversation.
No, but so you know what I mean, right? It does have this own life. And even when you are sleeping, it's still, people are still watching it. And so I think it can reach a much broader audience and for a much longer time.
All of this suggests that as much as we have fun doing these sorts of things, there has to be somebody at the other end who is wanting to be part of that interaction. So there must be, by extension, an appetite for wine education in China. How much appetite, how much has that grown in the almost two decades you've been playing around in this space?
It's been kind of a roller coaster lately. So I would say just prior to the last year of COVID, the numbers were just amazing. Everybody was like starting to drink wine. But during the last year of COVID, everything started to crumble. And now it's a much more difficult time, much more difficult period. When you look at the numbers, wine consumption or even the restaurants, I think that in the last year, I don't remember the number, but it was something like 10 million restaurants just closed.
10 million?
Something like that, yeah. I remember it's 1.5 million, 10 million, I don't remember, but it was something, a number which was, blew me away.
Is million a Mandarin word that means a couple of hundred, or is it really a million?
No, really millions, really.
That's horrifying.
Because China is so big, right? Because of policies that restrain people to consume alcohol and go out. The government is a bit worried that the people working in the administration spend too much money on going out and getting drunk and not doing their work properly the second day. So lately, a few months ago, there was this new policy saying that, okay, you cannot go and drink alcohol during the week, something like that.
That's a terrible policy.
Yeah. But I'm sure it will change. The good thing with China and the good thing with having this unique political party at the power is that things happen very quickly. Mm-hmm. So they put in place policies. They tend to make some trials. And then we realize, okay, it's not working or it's counterproductive. They just change it very quickly. So I'm quite positive and, optimistic that we're going to change that. But however, I think more and more people are getting interested into wine, and especially the younger generation. And I think that's a big difference to what we're witnessing in France, for example, or in Europe, where wine consumption is kind of the older generation drink. While in Asia, like in Japan, in Korea, or in China, I think the younger generation is interested in wine much more than their parents.
I'm excited to hear that.
Yeah, and they are, I would say, pretty open-minded. Things are changing in terms of trends very quickly. So, for example, I was speaking with Marcus from Musa, who told me that 8 years ago, 94% of wine exports from South Africa to China were red wines, 94%. This year, 48% of white wine.
Really? That's a big, big jump.
That's huge. And from 6 to 48% within 7 years. So I think that really illustrates the pace at which things are changing in China.
And I'm hoping that doesn't mean that the red level's dropping. It's rather that the white is catching up and there's a broader volume.
Unfortunately, no. It kind of really plummeted in the last years. You told me also that 7 years ago, imports were like 11 million liters and now it's just only 3 million. Because of its policies, mainly. In China, for example, the driving and drinking policy is super, super tough. So people, when they go to the restaurant, if they're driving, they just won't drink a single glass of wine. While we know, I don't know in South Africa how it is, but for example, in France, if you drink a couple of glasses, it's okay. But in China, it's like zero tolerance. If you get caught with alcohol, it's directly 15 days in jail. Directly. So it's people are really afraid to get caught.
It has changed a lot in South Africa. In the Swartland, you can only have 3 bottles. But the rest of South Africa, no, it's kind of a glass and you don't do more than that. We've got lots of great driving services that make things a bit easier here.
Yeah. And so in China, you know, it's you've got very different markets. It's such a big country. I mean, I think it's the same in South Africa, but Shanghai is really leading the way in terms of consumption and in terms of trends. Then you've got Shenzhen in the south, and Guangzhou, and inner cities or regions are a bit more slower in terms of wine consumption, but it's getting there. But you know, I think something very interesting to keep in mind is the way the policies have influenced the way people consume wine. So, one of my first job, as I was telling you, was for a wine importer. I remember very clearly we had one big client. It was one of the provincial army. So when the army was ordering wine, it was like 600 bottles, right? Now, these people, this administration, these organizations, they're not allowed to drink that much wine and to consume that much. However, you've got more and more individuals drinking wine, which means that when you look at the absolute numbers, it sounds very worrying because say, oh my God, you used to sell 600 bottles, but now you're only selling 60 bottles. However, we only had one client would buy the 600 bottles back then. Now we've got maybe 10 or 20 people each buying 3 bottles. So I think it's getting more, how do you say, scattered?
Spreading the risk and diversifying the market.
So, but it means, I think the market is growing.
Yeah.
I think it's growing, but the absolute numbers look a bit worrying. But I don't think it is.
I haven't been to China for a decade. It was my one visit. It was to Shanghai. I mean, Hong Kong usually 3 or 4 times a year. But I don't know the Chinese wine space and the culture around it at all, really. And so I will speak to you for guidance. What is the place of wine in modern Chinese culture? Would people at home, and I realize it's a rather large country, so we're generalizing enormously, but would having a bottle of wine with dinner be something that would be normal in a Chinese home?
Not at all. Unfortunately, not at all. They will drink wine 99.9% outside. So when they go to the restaurant, when we're meeting with friends, even if my circle of friends who are all wine lovers, only a few of us will drink wine at home. And I think that's going to be the next step. If we manage to let people understand in China that you can drink wine at home with your family, then the sales going to explode. There's a huge potential just for that, yeah.
So how do we translate that potential into there is a bottle of wine at every table for dinner?
I think the main reason is because people in China still think that wine is a kind of elitist drink. It's not like an everyday beverage. So they will pop up a bottle of wine just during special occasions. I have a good anecdote about that. You know, when I was many, many years ago, like 15 years ago, I was with my family for the Chinese New Year. Someone asked, what are we drinking tonight? And I said, let's drink some wine. And his answer was, wine? Ah, it's too difficult. Let's get some beer. So there is this, you know, this perception that wine is a complicated product, that you need, you know, to know a lot about wine, you need to have the proper glassware, you need to have the proper temperature, you need to maybe aerate the wine. So they are all, and I'm guilty of that because I'm a wine educator. And I think we've been trying to educate wine consumers when they don't want to be educated. And the fact that we are trying every time to speak about wine, how to, what dish to pair with this wine, what is the soil of this vineyard, what is the elevation, what is the planting density, etc. it makes it very daunting. I think it's very, it's scary. It's really scary. When you think about beer, you don't ask yourself that many questions, right? You just open a bottle from the fridge, up, you just drink it up, and that's it.
But there's a reason that somebody's a Heineken person, or they are a Castle Lager person, or you have your regular beer. It's familiar. You know what it is. It doesn't ask you questions. It's uncomplicated. And you're exactly right. Wine has done itself a massive disservice over the years in making itself inaccessible to so many people. And I think what we need, especially in France, is a young, good-looking wine educator, possibly with a French accent, who's got a really established social media program, who will guarantee on this show that within 6 months, he will have changed all of this and sorted out the French wine, the Chinese wine industry.
I often tell to people in China, you know what, let wine rock. Stop making it like, stop associate wine with, castles and a tuxedo and classical music. Make it much, you know, down to earth and a bit more dirty, right? You know, I was once interviewed by a wine intelligence, and they asked me a question about how to improve the image of Bordeaux wines in China. And I told them, you know what, when Bordeaux wines are coming to China for these big events, the owners are going. And the owners, you know, they are very uptight. They are the older generation, so very aristocratic outfit and behaviors. And I told them, you know what, let's invite the people who work actually in the cellar. These young guys and girls who are getting their hands dirty and will have a real passion for wine. And these guys, they will come and they will be much more relaxed and more casual. And people will want to drink wine with them. But when you have an aristocrat coming and, you know, I'm French, but you know, the French arrogant, you know, type, you don't want to share a glass with him, right? So you want to have younger people chatting about wine and their passion about wine. And so that's why when we were in the Swartland 2 days ago at Adi's place, and all these Swartland winemakers coming together and putting rock and roll music and having pizzas and on very rustic wooden tables, the feeling was just right. And that's what we need.
I think that's a massive part of the Swartland success story. Yes, the wine is exceptional, but the people are so identifiable. You really can sit down and just have a drink with them, and there is nothing more to it than that. And I love that element of it. And it's something that I think has helped us take our South African wine to different parts of the world with varying levels of success. The numbers that have dropped slightly, but which you're going to make sure change when you get back to China, it does still show there is a strong presence for South African wine in China. What is the perception of South African wine? What are people drinking? What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? What's the South African wine story in China at the moment?
To be totally honest, South African wines are... The problem is with the word Africa. I think Chinese people think that anything that comes from Africa is a low-quality product. Which is totally a misunderstanding of the continent and South Africa in particular. But they have this perception that Africa is a poor country, so how could they make like high quality wine, right? And so people who consume South African wines, I think, are the advanced wine lovers. People who know about wine, people who have went over this prejudice. And so there's a lot of work to really change people, I would say, misperceptions about the continent. So it's not only about the wine, it's about the country and about the continent. So it's very difficult. But it's very interesting. I think the best way is to have them taste wine under blind conditions. When you have a South African wine in a blind condition, you don't tell them it's coming from South Africa, and you put like French wines or Chilean wines or Australian wines on the side. South African wines have nothing to be ashamed of. Actually, the contrary, right? The other wine sometimes should be ashamed, because you've got such an intensity of aroma and complexity while being still restrained People then realize, oh my God, what is that? Well, that's come from South Africa, man. So stop having this misperception about South Africa and just believe, trust your palate, trust your taste. And that's the problem with a lot of wine consumers is that they don't trust themselves. They just trust the label. Like, why do people still buy, I like Bordeaux wines, but you know that, we all know that Bordeaux wines are not only good wines, right? But why would people still buy Bordeaux wines, even the bad ones? Because the brand is here. But if you have them like tested in under blind condition and just without knowing the identity and the origin of the wine, I'm sure that their perception will differ.
We've got one of those wines that I think would help to change those perceptions. It's a wine from South Africa that is available in China. This is the Bernard series, some old vine Chenin Blanc, which as a category is such a big part of South Africa's wine success, identifying these old vines, the value they have, and chronicling the wine as master of wine, first of all. Give me a couple of thoughts on the wine. What makes it leap out of the glass and put a smile on your face?
Well, I'd like to go to first speak about Chenin Blanc. Chenin Blanc is, I think, it's one of my two favorite white grape varieties. They can only be Sauvignon from Tempranillo du Jura. I love this grape variety as well. But Chenin Blanc is definitely one of my two favorite grapes because it's such a versatile grape variety. And I think it's the most versatile grape variety in the world. I mean, you've got this very lean, sometimes slightly sweet examples you can find in the Loire Valley. You've got this much more layered and full-bodied, sometimes oak age examples from South Africa. But then you can also do like sweet wines, like Late Harvest or Noble Rot wines. You can also do some very good sparkling wines, some MCC out of this grape variety. So it's a super versatile wine. And with, I think, a range of flavors that are really unique to it, of this beeswax character, this candle wax character, for all these wet wool notes, which I really, really enjoy. And for this wine in particular, what I like is this concentration of flavors, of aromas on both the nose and the palate. And you've got this slightly waxy marzipan touch, which really makes it very textural, and I really, really like this wine. Yeah,
one of my favorite memories of being in Hong Kong was visiting my sister when she used to teach there, and she introduced me to a friend of hers who was also teaching in Hong Kong. He was Chinese American, born in New York, but his parents were from China. And I asked him during the course of the evening what he most missed about America, and his answer was Chinese food, because the Chinese food of the rest of the world is obviously so different to the authentic. And we see that with many cultures, but I think with Chinese food, probably the most pronounced. So with this wine in hand, if I rock up at Julian's house for a proper Chinese meal, not something that I've got from my takeaway down the road that's layered with MSG and false impressions, what am I eating to bring the best out of this?
Okay, so that's something you really have to keep in mind, is that Chinese food culture is really different from the West. When people try to make wine promotion in China from this angle, I ask them to stop. If you're doing like a food and wine pairing in China, it's like it's really the hitting the wall. Because in China, if you really want, maybe that's one of the reasons why people don't drink wine at home, is because when you have a proper Chinese dinner, you will have like 6 to 10 different dishes on the table at the same time with very, very different textures and flavors. So you have like food, you would have fish, you would have beef and spicy food and bitter food and sour food and very different types of flavors. So when people try to really nail which dish would pair with this wine, that means that if people are having a dinner with 10 different dishes, they will never be able to open 10 different wines, right? So I think in China, we really have to promote wine and pair wine with a general atmosphere. Under which circumstances would you open this wine? Because I do believe that most wines do pair with most dishes. But
with Chenin Blanc being probably the best example thereof.
I think you're right, actually. I think you're pretty right. I think this one would go with a lot of different foods. Instead of speaking about dishes, we could speak about Chinese cuisines, because you know there's very different types of cuisine in China. So as you was mentioning, this wine would go with a lot of different food. I mean, in the Sichuan region and the Hunan province, you would have like very spicy food. That would be the main stream, I would say, on the table. And this one, you've got this oily texture, right? That would, I think, kind of protect your tongue and your taste buds against the hot.
The fiery affair.
Exactly, yep. Yeah. At the same time, I think this wine with a good, my favorite is Cantonese cuisine, you know? They have like a lot of braised pork, this, you know, suckling pig, this very fat, but at the same time, they also do have like a very light steamed fish, and it's a very, very diverse cuisine. But I think here, and this Chenin Blanc has this this acidity and this fresh mouthfeel that will cope very well with a Cantonese cuisine. So it's a very, as I was saying, it's a very versatile, great variety for the wine style it can produce, but also for the pairing opportunities it gives, yeah.
I will go back to your earlier assertion that you can't open 10 bottles of wine for dinner. I've been to many dinners, Julien, where at least 10 bottles have been opened, and sometimes it hasn't only been my wife and I. So we'll have to look at one of those when I come over to chat.
Yeah, that's a problem. It won't be only your wife and yourself. It's going to be like a big dinner outside, and it's not like a family dinner. What we want is that people in China open a bottle of wine, not only on these special occasions when we would open 10 bottles. I want them to be able, even if they are, you know, the couple with their parents, or only the couple, that they want to open a bottle of wine. That's my goal and my hope.
I want to get one last thought on this wine. We've never had Mandarin spoken on Dan Really Likes Wine. And as you speak a little more than I do, can you give me, very briefly, in Mandarin, a tasting note on Bellingham, the Bernard Series Old Vine Chenin Blanc?
Sure. 所以这是一款我觉得香气非常浓郁的，而且集中的一款酒的，它有含有层次感，它有很浓郁的这种辣的味道，还有一些蜂蜡的香气，一点点蜂蜜，一点点怎么说呢？ 石灰这种矿物感也是特别的明显，口感非常的圆润饱满，回味很长，是一个很漂亮的一款酒。
I cannot wait for Simi, my editor, to do the subtitles on this week's show. For those who don't speak Mandarin, just very simply, I am paraphrasing ever so slightly, but what has just been said by Julien is, this is an exceptional wine, it is world-class Chenin, and proves once again that South Africa makes wine so much better than France. I thought now this water's just been
censored.
I'm always fascinated to see how South African wine does around the world, but I'm also fascinated to see how wine in different countries, especially those where wine is not historically a fixture, is coming along. And I think a lot of us from afar have watched the Chinese wine industry with a great deal of interest. And at one stage, it looked like this was going to be the world's biggest wine producer in 10 years' time. Luxury houses and wine producers from France pouring money and resources into Chinese vineyards. And then it just didn't quite seem to catch fire. Where is the local Chinese wine industry now?
Well, again, it's because of the last 2 years' policies that really have put brake on every aspect of the wine industry, not only imports, but the local consumption and local production as well. There are hundreds of wineries now in China, and but the problem with Chinese wine is that their costs are extremely high. And because there's this policy that when you buy land, you have ownership for 30 years, which means that when you are investing in a winery, you need to get your money back quickly, right? So your return on investment should arrive in, within 5 or 6 years. So it's very difficult to offer low prices, and which makes the Chinese wines actually more expensive than imported wines. So Chinese people, they say, why would I drink a Chinese wine which has a such a short history while I have like very well established wine countries for half the price? So it's been very, very challenging for the Chinese wine industry production wise. However, there's also another issue, which is the lack of knowledge of some of the owners and of even the winemakers, because they study wine in a local university without having a real knowledge about, you know, the benchmarks of the world. So a little anecdote, I've got a student of mine who came to Nanning to study WC level 3 with me, and she's studying for becoming an engineer in vine and wine production. And I was asking her, what are you studying right now? She said, you won't believe me, we are learning how to repair a bicycle. What?
The fundamental part of the winemaking process.
Exactly, yeah. But she told me that something they have in common in, across all the engineering, maybe specialties. But that doesn't make sense. Anyway, and I asked her, so how do you have like a proper wine tasting? And she said, no, because because of budget problems. So we don't have access to a lot of wines, actually. So that's why she came to study WCT, to like have a proper understanding of the world of wine. And so the older generation, they've never had like proper Chenin Blanc, I think. And so if they're making Chenin Blanc, they wouldn't have like benchmark to compare their products. And that's been a very big issue. And in the past 20 years, now the new generation, the new people coming to the wine industry are the younger generation, who have been traveling a lot, who have been studying abroad, and who have been drinking a lot of super premium wines. So now you've got a new generation of young winemakers, young winery owners, who are starting to make really, really serious wines. Especially, I would say, in the Yunnan region on a Tibetan plateau. Yeah. And some of the wines coming out of there are just mind-blowing. I think this is going to be a premium wine producing region in the next 10, 20 years.
So if I am looking to add some Chinese wine to my cellar, that's the region I'm looking for. Are there particular grapes, varietals? Are there any endemic to China? What should I be looking for?
So there are the main grape variety is by far Cabernet Sauvignon, and it's been like it's make like 70% of the...
Is that because it's naturally suited, or because it's something everybody knows?
Yeah, exactly. So as I was telling you, back in the days, when the 20 years ago, when there were a lot of investment in the wine industry, main reference was Lafite. So everybody wanted to make the next Lafite. They wanted to make the next great Bordeaux wine in China. So they knew about Cabernet Sauvignon. So they planted it everywhere, despite the fact that it's not adapted to every region. But still, there are some very, very good Cabernet Sauvignon now coming out, because they are getting experience with the grape. And there's another grape variety, which is really, I think, the trump card for the Chinese wine, is the Marcelan. I don't know if you know this grape variety.
No,
Marcelan, Marcelan. It's a crossing that was created in 1961, if I recall, in France, by breeding Cabernet Sauvignon and Grenache. And this grape variety has never done great wines in France. It's mainly used in blends. But in China, they've imported it in 2001, and they've made amazing wine out of it. And
how did they work out that was the one that was going to strike gold?
I think it's pure chance. They imported this grape variety. They planted it in the north, and the wine was really convincing. I mean, started to spread it in other regions, and in the Shandong province, in the Ningxia, in the Xinjiang, and every region has its own expression of Marcelin, but the wines are always good. And the good thing with Marcelin is that it's a high cropper, like a bit like Chenin Blanc. So you can make like entry-level wines at a very affordable price, but tasting okay, without any greenness or off flavors. And yet you can still use it to make it super premium wines with a lot of extract, very intense flavor, a lot of concentration, and a great aging potential. So I think it's a great variety that will, I think, define the Chinese wine in the future. And the good thing with this grape variety is that I think the Chinese Marcelin will become the benchmark for this grape variety in the world. And I think that's very important because, for example, in South Africa, when we Pinotage, we are the only ones to make Pinotage. So we are the benchmark. Chenin Blanc, now we're kind of a benchmark as well, but people will always compare with the Loire Chenin Blanc. Or if you're making Cabernet Sauvignon, people will compare to Bordeaux. And if you're making Pinot Noir, you will compare with Burgundy. But if you're the only one in the world who really know how to handle this grape variety, you become the benchmark. And people in the other countries who are making this grape variety will say, ah, look, my Pinotage, is it as good as South African Pinotage? Is my Marcelin as good as Chinese Marcelin? So I think Marcelin is going to be this trump card that will, arouse the curiosity of consumers around the world and let them maybe push the door to other Chinese wines.
The accidental masterstroke of Chinese wine production.
Yeah, it is.
I get from all of this put together levels of measured excitement that there's a huge amount of potential, but there does need to be a bit of a change of government policy, and
yeah,
hopefully that's coming. That there is interest in South African wine, but we'd like it to be a bit more,
yeah,
and that the local market is perhaps not meeting early expectations, but certainly does have some potential. All of that adds up, I'm feeling from you, that there is still a lot of excitement and a great deal of potential to the wine world in China, both locally and from the rest of us coming in.
Of course. I mean, there's 1.4 billion people there.
Some of them have to like
and
wine.
All these people, except the West, in the West where they are Muslim, but I would say that 90% of these people are huge drinkers. They drink a lot of alcohol. So they may drink a bit of baijiu, which is the local, you know, spirits. They drink beer a lot. That's why I think it's the biggest beer consuming country in the world now. So the potential is just tremendous. It's just, if every Chinese people start to drink like 3 or 4 bottles of wine, you would not have enough wine in South Africa.
We dream of that day, and we're counting on you to make it happen, Julian, because I think you have the power to turn us all around.
Thank you.
What I know you do have the power to do is to give me a list, which I'll get off you afterwards, of some wines to look out for. Possibly if there is one you know of. I'm not sure I'm in China in the immediate future, but I am back in Hong Kong in a few weeks. And if there's a good wine bar in Hong Kong that stocks some Chinese wine, I'd love to go and try it, especially some Marcellus, and see if this is real or if it's just something you've made up to tell me in the podcast. But also I do hope to get to China in the next while. In fact, I think I might be there next year, because I'd love to get a sense on the ground of Chinese wine, of the Chinese wine culture. Nelson Mandela famously spoke of judging a country, a culture, through the eyes of how it treats children. I judge a country through its wine glass, which I think is far more important to do. And I think Madiba, if he'd thought it through, would have come up with the same conclusion. So I do look forward to getting over and to drinking some wine with you on your turf. But until then, I'm really honored to have had you on the show. Thank you for sharing your story and some insights into the world of wine. And I love the fact that you are so taken with South Africa, so taken with South African wine, and we look forward to many more visits to South Africa from you.
Thanks a lot. And you're welcome to China whenever you want.
All right. Apparently, I don't even need a passport. Just a photo of me with Julian, and I shall waltz through customs at Shanghai International on my wine adventure in China, giving us a dimension we haven't had before on the show, which has been fabulous. And a big thank you to the Woza team and Marcus for helping to put this together. He is the poster boy of wine across China, and he has taken wine education into new and very welcome space across a country that's drinking a fair amount of wine, but could drink so much more, and hopefully wine with South Africa on its label. My guest this week on Dan Really Likes Wine, a master of wine and almost an honorary South African, Julian Boulard.